Decentraland Podcast with David Amoyano.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the CalcioLand podcast. So we're recording this on Monday morning in Boston. So it's right after the Serie A weekend. We're going to name our winners and losers of what we saw. We then have a great interview with our returning guest. I feel like we wanted to talk a little bit more about Milan. And we had our dear friend Alessandro Iagobone from Milanista Non Evoluto. We've had him on multiple times. Just please know we recorded this on Saturday. So not only before the Milan match, but before a lot happened in the Champions League race. We have our Twitter questions. Not surprisingly, quite a few are dedicated to transfers. We then have a patron-only Q&A segment of the podcast. If you like the content of the podcast, enjoy transfer talk and whatnot, I think you'd really enjoy being a patron. We have a lot of extra content available there. And then we are going to close the podcast with an interview I did with Gino De Blasio. I know a lot of you guys have been asking me to talk more about the problem with racism in Serie A stadiums. So I finally came across someone that I wanted to have a discussion about this important topic on. So that'll be at the very end. A couple of things. There's really no calcio talk per se. I've always said this is a much bigger topic than calcio. We did get a little bit into politics, history, culture. You know, if that sort of things tends to upset you, I think you guys kind of know where I stand on some of these issues. I'm giving you fair warning. That's the end of the podcast. And I understand that won't be up everyone's alley. But before we get to all that, I'm joined by our dear friend, Alex Goldberg, the producer, co-host of this podcast. His podcast on Chelsea is really doing incredibly well. So, Alex, I wanted to talk to you about the race for a Champions League spot because a lot happened on this. For a while, you and I were on the train that Inter and Milan were going to be the last two teams. But things have really changed a lot. So before I ask you where you see this situation ending up, let me give you a quick recap of where the teams are, who they have to face, because I think that'll help us a little bit. So we have Inter in third place, 63 points. They have to face Kiev at home, Empoli away, Napoli away, and Empoli at home. Atalanta, just 1 point behind Inter. Right now, they have the last Champions League spot if the season were to end now. So they play Genoa, technically a home game, although they're restructuring their stadium, so that'll be at Sassuolo. They travel to Turin to face Juve, has really nothing to play for. And then they travel to Reggio Emilia to face Sassuolo in what is technically a home game for them, but really a home match for Sassuolo. So they're at 62 points. Then we have the teams trying to catch up to them. Roma, 59 points, and they have to play Juve at home, travel at Sassuolo, Parma at home. Torino, still somewhat in the mix, 57 points. Home against Sassuolo at Empoli, home at Lazio to finish the season. And then Milan, who are at 56 points but have one less game played. They're going to play later today against Bologna. Other than that, they are going to travel to Tuscany to face Fiorentina. They play Frosinone at home and then the end of season at Spal, who has basically already clinched avoiding relegation. So this is where we stand, Alex. So let me ask you, with three games to go, who do you think the two teams other than Juve and Napoli will be in the Champions League representing Serie A?
All right, David, I hate to be so simplistic, but I'm actually going to choose my third and fourth place in the Serie A standings, not based on goal differential, but it's going to be ordered in the leaders in goal differential. Of course, Juventus have the best goal differential than Napoli. They're first and second. David, I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, and maybe it now applies that saying you like. Maybe I'm just a two-game losing streak from sounding like an idiot, but I am drinking the Kool-Aid on Atalanta, who are in incredible form, really playing well. Huge win over Lazio at the weekend. Right now, they're fourth, but 1 point behind Inter. I'm saying Atalanta are going to continue that hot streak and they are going to be in third place by season's end because the only game, the only game I see them, there are three remaining Serie A games left. The only game I see them dropping points at all is the Juventus one. But as you said, Juventus has nothing to play for. So I think Atalanta is going to come guns a-blazing in that game and get at worst a draw. So out of the remaining nine possible points, I expect Atalanta to pick up at least seven of those nine possible points, and very well possibly nine. And Atalanta, by the way, has the third best goal differential in Serie A, four above Inter. So you can really make the argument they have been the third best team. I know goal differential doesn't always tell the story, David. However, you want to know where Roma, Torino, and Milan are on goal differential behind Atalanta? Roma is 13 behind Atalanta, so is Torino, and Milan is 14 behind Atalanta in goal differential. It's not even close. So I think that is telling on who the four best teams have been. And then I do have Inter in fourth place. So really, it's not a huge thing against Roma, Torino, and Milan. I just think Atalanta and the form they are in, and the fact that I only see them dropping at most 2 points to Juventus, I just don't give those three teams a chance to get back in there. So my answer is Atalanta in third and Inter in fourth. That's my take, David. What about you?
Very interesting on the goal differential. You know, that's something I was looking at yesterday as well. What really stands out to me is really Atalanta, as you mentioned. They have a 28 positive goal differential, double what Milan has with a much smaller payroll. You got to give them a ton of credit. What's really outstanding about Atalanta is they scored 40 goals away from home. Truly remarkable. To put things in perspective, Juve has 31, Atalanta has 9 more. To put things in perspective, Milan away from home has half of that, only 20. So yeah, they're red hot. I think the only thing with Atalanta that might give me a little bit of pause is they're also in the Coppa Italia final against Lazio. It was very interesting when Gasperini, their coach, was asked yesterday between the two, what's more important? He said Champions League. He said, yeah, trophies are nice, but he goes, reaching an objective is a trophy in and of itself. And he goes, we're really going to try to do both. But if I had to pick one, he said Champions League. So interesting there. I'm going to stick to Inter. I think they will finish third. They will be right. I think Atalanta's close to them, but I think Inter is going to finish third. It would be the most Inter thing ever to not beat Chievo at home, who have been already relegated by the last match of the season. Empoli could be already relegated. They're going to travel to Napoli. Napoli has nothing to play for, and they've been really uninspired now. So on paper, I like Inter's schedule. Now, interestingly, Juve plays both Atalanta and Roma. They're going to be a factor there. But I think Roma really committed suicide in that match against Genoa yesterday, which was really an unbelievable game. So they had the lead. Genoa tied it in the end, and then Genoa could have almost beat them in the end when Sanabria missed the penalty kick. So I think Roma might have really jeopardized their season there. But they, on paper, have a pretty soft schedule as well, depending on how much you think Juve are going to do. I think Torino been a great story, but I don't see them, even if they run the table and win their last three matches. So I'm going to go Inter and Atalanta. And I'm going to say it once again, thank God for Atalanta. They've been such a great story. It's been a really difficult year for podcasts like ours that cover Serie A, and they've consistently been a great story, and I think they're going to end it with the positive momentum. And I'm going to go as far as saying they're going to win the Coppa Italia and finish in a Champions League spot.
Love it. So you're drinking the Kool-Aid on them as well. All right, David, before we get to winners and losers, I just want to ask you about these Pjanic quotes that I saw he made on French TV. What was your take on them?
So not surprising. I think anyone that's been listening to the podcast and is a patron for us, I've been writing a lot about Pjanic's future. I've been saying for a while that I really wouldn't be surprised if this is his last season at Juve. I've said it. You look at the amortized values of the players on the squad. He's one of the logical players they can make a huge profit on. The others are Dybala, Alexandro, to a lesser extent Cancelo, which we'll get to later, although he hasn't been on the squad that long. And look, Pjanic got a big raise last year. He's been linked to clubs outside of Italy for a while. So I'm not surprised. And those quotes, for those of you that didn't see it, he said PSG is a great club. His goal is to win the Champions League and that players hold PSG in high regard. He said anything can happen in the transfer market. We'll see what happens in the summer and that he wants to go on vacation. He also said Juve is a great club and they'll make a decision all together. And as you know, Juve, the will of the player, interesting there. I also felt Pjanic and Dybala, for whatever reason, when it comes to formations, are almost mutually exclusive under the current regime. So let's see what happens with Allegri. But I've been saying for a long time, I wouldn't be surprised if Pjanic leaves Juve. I also maybe, and I know the midfield's an area of concern for a lot of Juve fans for good reason, but I've said it all along, if Pjanic is your best or even your second best midfielder, you're probably in trouble. If he's your third best, you're in great shape. So we have Ramsey coming in. I think Emre Can's shown a lot of developments. Juve is definitely going to do more in the midfield if Pjanic goes, but I wasn't surprised at all for the quotes. I always think it's very interesting where players make these quotes. I don't think Pjanic would have said things in those terms to the Italian media. He spoke on French TV, talked about PSG, of course, had played in France before. So I wasn't surprised by any of it, to say the least.
All right. I appreciate your take on that. So, David, like we do every Monday, and I know people also appreciate your take on the weekend in Serie A. So let's do our winners and losers segment. Who are winners and losers of episode 217 of the Calcioland podcast?
So I'm going to start with a team I haven't done a good enough job covering on the podcast, and this is Spal. So Spal avoided relegation 2 years in a row in Serie A with a minuscule payroll. They refurbished their stadium. Their fan base is very loyal, passionate. They also paid a nice tribute to Moise Keane when Juve played there. So really a lot to like at Spal. I feel like we talked a lot about their right wing back Lazzari, but not enough about the team. So they are huge winners. Congratulations to them. Then we had the match between Udinese and Inter, which had draw written all over it. Kind of helped both teams reach their objective, but a very good performance by Udinese keeper Busso, Argentinian, arrived to Serie A this season. He's been excellent this season. I'd say other than Cragno, Sirigu, like those have been the elite. Donnarumma has been very good for a while. I kind of see Busso right on the next tier of those who performed the best this season in Serie A. Then we had Empoli, who stayed alive against Fiorentina. They won the Tuscan Derby. They are still in the race to avoid relegation. They got two big performances from January acquisitions. Their goalkeeper, Dragowski, who arrived from Fiorentina, he was excellent once again. And Diego Farias scored. He was a January acquisition to keep him alive. Then we had Atalanta's huge win against Lazio at the Olimpico, despite falling behind. Duvan Zapata scored his 22nd goal of the season. 14 of these have been scored on away matches. We had a brilliant performance by Papu Gomez as well. Then we had Sampdoria, who's been absolutely in free fall, but Quagliarella did score his 25th goal of the season off a penalty kick as a for the season. So Quagliarella looks like the front runner to win the Capocannoniere race. Then we had that match between Genoa and Roma. El Shaarawy continues to be Roma's most impressive player this season. I felt like they brought out the Egypt formation, where basically 10 mummies in the back and a pharaoh up front. That's what that a lot of Roma matches have felt like recently. Although let's give credit to goalkeeper Mirante, who saved the penalty. Granted, it wasn't shot well, but you got to wonder how different Roma's season would look had Mirante been the starter over Olsen all along. Then we had the match between Cagliari and Napoli. Mertens had a very strong finish to the season, already 14 goals, kind of sneak up on us. And then we had Cragno, Cagliari's keeper, with another superb performance. I'm glad we've been way early on the Cragno bandwagon on this podcast. I see a lot of people now recognizing him as the best goalkeeper of the season in Serie A. The flip side are losers. We had Inter, who continue to struggle scoring goals. Icardi came off the bench. They've scored 5 goals in their last 5 matches. But that point against Udine, they were helped by Roma collapsing. Montella at Fiorentina, big losers, got 1 win and 4 losses since arriving The team's been in complete free fall. He hasn't made it any better. Then we had Lazio on that home loss. We had Wallace, who was absolutely dreadful defensively. If you watch The Wire, the answer to the question, where's Wallace, is should be on the bench and permanently. And then we had Ciro Immobile, who hasn't scored in a run of play goal since March 10th. You guys know I love Zaniolo, but recently he's been pretty anonymous. Didn't put in a good performance against Genoa. He's really struggling as a winger. I'm surprised they're using him there. Then we had Sanabria, the Genoa striker, who at least obtained the penalty kick, but then missed it. With had he converted it, Genoa would be completely out of wouldn't be in jeopardy of being relegated. And then finally, Frosinone were mathematically relegated, although I don't think many expected them to stay in Serie A. So one thing that we always expect to be great is when we have our dear friend Alessandro Iacobone from Milan Non Evoluto coming on. He's a Milan insider. He was way ahead on the Piontek transfer, passionate Milan fan. So we wanted to chat with him on a bunch of Milan-related topics. Again, just remember, we recorded this before Milan's match against Bologna and even before a few matches that were key in the race for the Champions League. So although it has been a difficult period for Milan, I'm always very happy when we're joined by our next guest, someone I've had the chance to get to know a little bit offline, and a true gentleman and un Milanista doc, as I like to say. And this is our friend Alessandro Iacobone, who is based in Milano and who runs one of the historic Facebook groups, Milanisti Non Evoluti. And I have to say, in the past year or so, Ale's profile has really raised. If you guys remember, the last time we had him on was when Milan signed Piontek, and he was right on top of the story right when it came out. So his insight on Milan is always very valuable, but I also enjoy just spending time with him because he's such a gentleman. So Ale, as always, it's a pleasure to welcome you back to Calcioland.
Thank you, David. Thank you to all of your listeners. And the Milan fan, is a pleasure for me to hear your words about me too much. But thank you very, very much, because you know how much I appreciate you, your podcast, and your community. So it's a pleasure for me to be part of it today. And I'm ready.
Awesome. Okay, Alice. So first off, I want to let everyone know we are recording this on Saturday, so a few days before Milan's match against Bologna. So we're purposely not going to talk too much about, obviously, that game or the situation in the standings. I want to talk a little bit about what's been going on recently and look to the future a little bit. So Ale, when we had you on last time, it was towards the end of the January window where Milan did really well. There were some very good results following that. And to me, it feels that everything changed for Milan with the loss in the derby. It wasn't a good performance. And since then, the team has really struggled. So I want to ask you, A, if you agree with that assessment. And in your opinion, what are the main reasons why Milan has struggled so much in the past month or so?
But basically, I thought a lot about it because, I've been quite surprised about this kind of collapse lately. And I consider that there is nothing like no ghosts behind what's happened. There is no like specific reasons. We were like a card castle, like beautiful to look at, but very, mm-hmm. very easy to destroy it. And I think that the loss with the derby that we approach with too much confidence, the bad part of the confidence, not that one that adds you out to give the best, but what is destroying and what. When it's managed like from players that are not strong enough, like as a man, as a person, like it's gonna be like a problem, not like a advantage, like you know, to have it. So I think that we are not strong enough mentally to approach to to important games. And all the time that we said, and the protagonist said, like, this is last final, this is one of the last finals we lost. So probably they keep saying that because they don't think to be ready for that. And that's the main problem for me.
So, Ale, one thing that I like about you is you're very passionate about Milan. You're close to the team. You've been a big defender of this group of players, I have to say, recently. But, you know, we had as we're talking right now, Milan's players are in ritiro. This happened, you know, for a variety of reasons, which we'll get to in a second. And I could tell a little bit from you as well that you're maybe a little bit starting to be disappointed with the players. So let me ask you if you think the team waited too long to do something like the ritiro. And would you say there's a problem with discipline, commitment to the maglia, as you would say, on this current Milan?
Well, I think that, of course, like when the team is not going good, when there are critical problems inside the group, all the media they keep talking about discotheque, nightlife, easy approach of to the training, and blah blah blah. I consider that I give you an information. I work, my main work is like fashion. So I work in the fashion business. Fashion business is strictly connected to the nightlife in Milan. Mm-hmm. And last seasons when I was younger and single, I was going out 5 nights by week, you know? And I can tell you something. Now I can say to all the Milan fans and the listeners that the most important players, the winning players that we had, and they made us like so happy for the trophies and the championships and blah blah blah. They were going out more often than the players that we have now.
Mm-hmm.
And they saw with my eyes because I was in the clubs and I was always meeting players of FC Milan, FC Inter, Juventus, and blah blah blah. So the main problem is not that some of the our players, they go out and they don't do that much because I have PRs that they write me on WhatsApp advising that they are outside or whatever because someone they know about my passion, they play me around. So they contact me to say, oh, well, your players are here or whatever, blah, 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 blah. But it's not that often as much was happening when we were winning everything. So I think that probably the right point of view is that they thought after several match that we won, we were in the third position, blah, blah, blah. We seriously thought to be cool and good player. And they are not. The only one problem that we had players that they thought to be, to deserve like colors, to deserve like, to be considered like top players. But they are not. First of all, you see, because nobody is asking about them. For example, Suso, one of the players that is disappointing me too much, like lately, and he acts and he behaves basically like a top star. No one is wondering if he's on the market or not, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So we were like treating them like top players when top players, they are not at all. So I think that the approach is, this one, it's been this one disappointed Gattuso that was like sharing the spogliatoio, the restroom with the real players that were the first ready to train as a crazy. Alessandro Nesta, Paolo Maldini, all the players that I can give you a list of 1,000. So that's the most important thing. Probably Gattuso was disappointed about this new generation of players. Is basically what is going on the social. People that think to be cool because as followers, but is no one in the world, you know, no one. But they give like importance to themselves. That's what is going on inside of our team. Too much credibility to players that are not ready to wear this t-shirt, this shirt, this skirt, and all the Milan World. So we should think about to create a group of men before that soccer players.
Well said. So let's talk about the recent architect of the team. So Leonardo recently has been under criticism as well. Obviously, he came into the mercato towards the end of the summer. There was financial fair play situations that he inherited, change in ownership. And, you know, to his credit, in January, he made some moves that have gotten results on the pitch. But maybe the moves from the summer, and again, there were circumstances there, haven't really paid off. So give me your take on Leonardo, and how much time do you think a sporting director needs to be fully evaluated?
Well, as I said, like last season when Mirabelli and Fassone were like managing Milan, and the people was criticizing like the market that Mirabelli director did, I keep saying the same because I don't change because of the changing of management. I consider that we can value the result and the quality of the work of a sporting director just after at least 2 seasons. I mean, for a market step. And before it's like there is no sense to do it. First of all, because you have to understand who deserve from your group of guys to stay in Milan, change that man that they don't deserve to be ready and have like to be in a good situation, even economically, in the right moment to take the first player that could change the things on the field and everything. So you need to understand where the minister, where the coach wants to go, which kind of game like wants to do, and which kind of tactics to approach. So there are like many things to consider before to judge the construction of a rose of a, like a group of players. So that's the main reason why I don't agree to point at Leonardo, to point at Maldini, to point at Elliot. We need to wait at least for this summer season to understand who will be the coach, where Elliot wants to go, which player, and how much money we can put on the table to buy the right players. Because we need to have young players, of course, but young like Ajax, not like young like our that they are 25th. And we consider young when they are like 6 years older than the Ajax one, you know? It's not about the age. It's about the quality. So to buy like a 19 years old or a 20 years old young player, but strong, you need to put cash on the table. So that's what Elias has to do, because considering that Bertolacci, Mauri, and Montolivo and whatever they're going to sell or not buy like Bakayoko, you need to buy a lot of players, but not to do to arrive to the 25th players on the list. You have to improve the quality of it, because what we missed this season when we had the injury time, like we had like many injured like players, is then to have the quality on the bench, you know, like people that was ready to change the match, and we have not that players sitting on the bench, and that's why we miss some stats and we miss some even alternative tactics to across problems that of course all the teams have in an entire like season. So that's what we should work, and not complain about what Leonardo did, because yes, Leonardo probably missed like Laxalt buying, like Castillejo is not that strong. But how many players we still like changing one season to another season because of the trainer, like the coach, or just because of they understood where they are or whatever. So we cannot like cancel Conti, Kessié, or other players that we consider like when they were like in Atalanta team, we were like considering like great. So they didn't like, You understand what I mean? They know how to
absolutely.
Play soccer. They for sure they know how to play. We just to find a way to give value to them and to come back like to improve the what they do on the field. That's what the new coach that probably will be not Gattuso has to do, and because the quality, I'm sure that there is in this group of people. We need just to kick out the people that we don't deserve, and they don't deserve to wear like our t-shirt, and want to respect what our history, our brand, our logo, whatever, our like fans that are being the best players ever in this season, because even Monday, San Siro is going to be full. And so the only one clap that we can do for this season is to our fan that being beside the clap.
Absolutely. So now let's talk about one player that's been in the headlines a lot. And for a while it was for his performances on the pitch. And this is Bakayoko, I think, from November until maybe a month ago, was probably Milan's best player throughout the season. Now, he was the reason for the ritiro because of being late and whatnot. So let me ask you your assessment of Bakayoko this season recently. And more importantly, do you see him staying at Milan? Now, Milan does have an option to buy him from Chelsea. It's a significant amount of money. Also, he is a quality player. So tell me a little bit, what do you think's happened with him recently and what do you see happening in the future with him?
Well, I think that Bakayoko is what we see like in the social profile that he has, like the way that he's having like the look, you know, the clothes and everything. He's a star. He's a kind of pop star as well, you know, the kind of icon that is across the soccer player and the pop star as well. So I don't judge a player that all the time that went to the field gave the best for our shirt, and that's for sure. I think that no one can complain about what I'm saying. The Bakayoko that we saw on the field is one player that, of course, Elliot has to buy and to pay 35 million, because I don't see other players strong enough with that money that we can buy and blah, 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 you know? So for me, it's one point of start from the next season. Of course, when the team is not winning, when things is not going well, everything are focused about the bullshit stuff. Like you saw how many institutional people spoke too much about the stupid things about the Acerbi t-shirt.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
But no one spoke about the racism. I've been the only one, and I never give up like about it, because it's been like very disgusting to see like colors for 90 minutes in the Milan-Lazio in a Coppa Italia match. And I've been like tagging all of the institution like FIGC and even Gabriele, I'm sorry, I don't remember the name of
Gravina.
The president, thank you. And I'm glad that Scaroni took the video that I prepared and sent to them straight in the email, because that's the most important thing to fight, not if Bakayoko sometimes drink a beer with friends in a club coming back after midnight at home, or wearing R&B and hip-hop style. That's not the main problem. It's important what they do in the field. I always said like that I prefer an asshole as you're laughing about what I'm saying, like, you know, as a player like that are like a top star on Twitter, but after they give the quality on the field, instead of to have an angel like De Sciglio that was like going to the church, and Milanello, church, Milanello, was without any passion, giving us any kind of feeling and vibes. So what is important for the soccer player is to play great on the field and to be professional. I don't think that the late of Bakayoko is that much a problem. Of course, it happens like too many times, and if gives the chance to the other and the younger like players to do the same, it's not good for the group. And so Gattuso did great to put them in retiro, to let them understand that they are playing for AC Milan. But I don't want to make it bigger than the thing are. Like, otherwise, it's like, you know, to punish ourselves. They already do it, the other people, referees, institutions, and blah, blah, blah. So we should stay close to the team and don't create like things that they are not like that much stronger.
Yeah, well, I completely agree with you on how blown out of proportion the Bakayoko, Kessié, Acerbi thing, especially compared to the chance and all that needed a lot more attention. So great, good job on your part for, highlighting this situation. So you mentioned Gattuso. And look, you know, up until that derby, I was certain he was going to come back as Milan's coach. It goes to show how quickly things can change. And as you mentioned now, it looks really pretty unlikely. So, in your opinion, who do you think are some candidates to be Milan's coach next season? And let me ask, who would you like to see as Milan's next coach?
Well, as I said, like before, it's up to Elliot to print and to give us like the direction where they want to do and they want to go. Like, in few words, we have like two streets to follow. The Antonio Conte's one, or Sarri's one, or Klopp one, or whatever. I'm saying I'm giving you like a random important coach name, and Ten Hag, or put on the list whatever, like whoever you prefer. And this means like to put on the desk a lot of millions to pay the coach and to pay to build the project that this coach pretend and they expect. Like, if you cannot, because of the fair play, because your intention is to grow up a group of young players and blah, 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 but not like arriving so quickly to the point that we dream to be, like in few years, or competing like with Barcelona, Liverpool, Ajax, and blah, 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 blah. We should focus on Gasperini. Gasperini, the coach, ready to give more value to the players that he had, like Conti. And we have already on the list, like Conti, Kessié, and Caldara. I give like a kiss to Caldara and good luck for the other one, like injury that he had, like unlucky guy. But I mean, we could prepare like a good like group of young players with a coach that is the time that he shows to be ready for a great team after he felt the chance with FC Inter a few years ago. He gave us like a good static, you know, game and a kind of a game that we could like, because Atalanta plays a lot well, like against like even a stronger team than Atalanta is. So, but of course, it's gonna be like a smaller like point of start to reveal, like another kind of a road to follow, and probably longer, probably not fascinating like Conte or Sarri or Ten Hag or whatever, but probably more easy to follow, more easy to follow, even respecting the fair play financiari.
Absolutely. So, as I mentioned, Ale, when you first came on my radar, you were more the Facebook page of Milanisti Non Evoluti or close to the team. But I have to say, in the past 12 months or so, you've become really a great source for news on transfers. So, as I mentioned, last time we had you on, you were the first one with Piontek coming to Milan. So, and we know a lot with Milan's contingent on the Champions League and the financial situation is pretty tough. But can you tell us some players that you could see Milan targeting and pursuing in the summer?
I think that AC Milan is preparing two kind of plans. As I said, like is up to the Champions League qualification, because I appreciate what Scaroni said, like 50%. I mean, I appreciate that he didn't want to like show that everything was around the 50 million that the Champions League qualification could bring, and that Elio is ready to do like to have a strong project. But in the meantime, probably he gave us alibi to the entire Milan world, like to don't get to the point. But I'm sure that these 50 million are like necessary to decide if to follow the plan A or B. And so we have on the desk, and Leonardo has on the desk different names, like Everton, that is a lot expensive right now. For sure, there is like another target that we missed, like lately, and the play with us, like, and this one of the player that I really like, and I was disappointed that we didn't keep it like with us. And of course, and you know what I'm talking about, and players in the middle of the field, like Lorenzo Pellegrini is under under look, and Tonali is under look, and we have to see if keeping him like in Brescia and give them like another year of a chance like to approach the Serie A. But because basically we are like, we need to have young players, but we need to have ready players, because we cannot miss the Champions League qualification next season at all. We cannot lie to our followers and everything. So I'm seriously curious to understand which target we could get, because we are ready to approach two different players, and we are still having a brand that attracts the players and coaches. But the most important thing is what Elliot wants to show to them. If the Elliot is going to put on the desk a great project, I'm sure that a Milan fan that can enjoy a market like season, like with great names, because Milan has still, AC Milan has still the same kind of attraction to the players and the coaches. But of course, we need to be ready to put cash. And unfortunately, if you are not like Ajax, that scout and invest of players when they are 16, 17, and they put on the field when they are 17, 18, we cannot do that, because our championship doesn't permit that too much. We need to be ready to put cash on the table to take them, to put on our list players and to prove. But I'm positive about. So I don't want to say names, because I already gave some names, but the direction is the most important thing. If you know what to do, you're going to find players, because there are players that are very, very, very good. And also Van der Beek, like that we had the chance to take 1 year and a half ago. But unfortunately, the Chinese, they gave us not the permission after the Bonucci arrived. So we had the chance to have a great middle player, like a midfield player. But you see, sometimes the fate pushes the players in the other direction. I hope that the fate is going to look at us with better eyes in the future and give us the chance to have these kind of players playing in San Siro.
Ale, I love your passion. I appreciate that you gave a reason for optimism at the end for Milan fans. So you guys definitely follow Ale at Non Evoluto. You'll get his love for Milan, but also some great transfer news with the summer coming sooner. You can hear him on Radio Rossonera. You can watch him on Sport Italia, a true gentleman, un Milanista doc, and I'm always so humbled, and it's always a pleasure to have you on Calcioland, amico.
Thank you, David. Let me say last thing about we are close to publish a magazine. And
awesome.
Because yeah, exactly. As Associazione Milanisti 1899, that control Radio Rossonera, and we have another project that is coming like in few days out on the website of Radio Rossonera. You can also find even in English like all the extraction to take this free issue that they're gonna be in this year, like the next one, like from May and crossing the birthday of 120 years anniversary of AC Milan, and the magazine's 120 Milan, that talks about the history, about some point of view that the fans they didn't have like before, and with great content, specially made and produced by Milan's fan, and so they are very full of Milanismo blood. And Luca Serafini is the director.
Oh, great.
And I also wrote an article for the magazine, for the first issue. And that's what is the most important part for you, is also in English. So you can appreciate also in your language without the translated. And so it's something that you can keep on your desk. It's something, it's not like a magazine that you throw away in the paper fold. Like you can keep it in your bibliothèque, close to your memories of AC Milan. It's one way to speak about AC Milan in another point of view, not like passing the finger on the screen of the cell phone, of the smartphone, but on the paper, the real paper, the smell as a paper that can, you know, keep all the Milanismo feelings into it. And is a jump in the past, as the Milan should jump in the past to take all the values that make this kind of this team strong and famous and in the entire of the world. So is a product that I invite you to check, to appreciate.
Absolutely.
And to share with your AC Milan fans.
Well, I'm sure if you're involved, it's going to be excellent, like everything else you do. So, Ale, always a pleasure. I look forward to chatting with you in the near future. And thanks so much for hopping on Calcioland.
Thank you for the time dedicated to me and Forza Milan. And thank you for everything.
All right. Awesome. Great to hear from Alessandro. Now it's time to hear from our listeners. Let's move on to Twitter questions. David, let's jump right into it. First Twitter question. Who would you rather see make it to the Champions League between Milan, Roma, and Atalanta?
So, you know, I try to look at it, you know, what would make the best impact for the league? Obviously, Atalanta is a great story, play great football. I think it would be a breath of fresh air if they make it. Roma, we know how important the Champions League revenue is to their project. Look, they're going to sell one or two good players. We know that this summer, regardless. If they don't make the Champions League, there could really be the floodgates there. Milan, I've said it all along. To me, it's really important that both Milan and Inter get back to the Champions League regularly. I think, you know, the way we perceive Juve winning Serie A, Napoli finishing second, is really skewed. We don't give it enough importance because of how much Milan and Inter have struggled. As great as Atalanta's story is, Milan has such bigger brand impact revenues that I do think the long term, the best thing for Serie A is for Milan and Inter to get 2, 3, 4 seasons in a row in the Champions League. So as much as I love Atalanta as a story, as someone who covers Serie A, I'm still taking that it's better for the league as a whole if Milan does it.
Fair enough. Absolutely. I see where you're coming from there. All right, David, next Twitter question. Where do you think Chiesa will play next season?
Yeah, so look, you know, Fiorentina completely falling apart to end the season, I think makes it all but certain he will be sold. in the summer. So I know he's been linked to some clubs abroad, but I have a feeling he's staying in Serie A. He's been previously linked to Napoli. I wonder if they've been priced out of those sweepstakes, especially if Insigne stays, which seems to be the case. It really comes down to Juve and Inter. Inter really like him. Inter have tried to sign a lot of young Italian players. I think he'd be a perfect fit at Inter, especially if Perisic leaves. He'd be a set starter there. I could see him and Lautaro being a really nice duo. If Icardi stays, I could see maybe all three of them potentially playing together, although that doesn't seem like an ideal fit. But I think Inter would be a really nice spot for him. Juve, we saw with the Bernardeschi deal that their relationship with Fiorentina is a lot better than it used to be. The two sporting directors, Paratici and Pantaleo Corvino, have a good relationship. Andrea Agnelli, Juve's president, really likes the idea of bringing in a top Italian young prospect since they have so many foreigners. So I think it's going to come down to those two. Juve is willing to pay him a very big contract to sway him to come over. But then you got to wonder, you know, is Juve going to go with Chiesa, Bernardeschi, Ronaldo up front? Where does that leave Dybala? Where does that leave João Felix? I definitely think João Felix and Chiesa are mutually exclusive because of cost and amount of games played. So let's see what happens. But as it stands now, if I had to guess, it was going to be Juve or Inter.
All right, David, how about this? Could João Cancelo really join Manchester United next season?
So there's been a lot of talk on Cancelo, who I thought in the first half of the season was the best right back in Serie A on Juve. Absolutely devastating. Then he got injured. Second half of the season, not so great. Still not good defensively. Him and Allegri haven't had a great relationship. We know Allegri famously started De Sciglio over him a few times in the Champions League. I mean, I think Cancelo's devastating. I'm not sure how great of a fit he is with Allegri. And look, as much as I'm a fan of Allegri, I'm going to say I think it's best for Juve to move on from him. Also because losing a talent like Cancelo because he doesn't really mesh with Allegri wouldn't be good for Juve because it's very hard to find players of that caliber. So I think there is a realistic chance that he goes to Man United. I know some people have reported it. Obviously, Man United have a great relationship with Jorge Mendes, Cancelo's agent. I said at the top that when I look at Juve squad, the players that they can make a big profit on, there aren't many of them. But considering they spent $40 million on Cancelo, I still think his market value has gone up a lot because it's very hard to find right backs like him despite his second half of the season. So if Juve could get $60, $70 million for him, they'd still make a big profit because of the amortization over the $40 million. So I wouldn't exclude it altogether. Let's see what happens there. But I think especially if Allegri stays at Juve, we could see this happening. Another Serie A player that's been linked to Man United is Barella. I'm curious to see because to me it looks more and more like Sarri is going to stay at Chelsea. They could definitely be in the mix again for him. In Italy, Napoli seems a little bit less into the mix for him. There were reports that Di Marzio had that Barella is cautious to leave Cagliari for Napoli. He's a hometown boy. There's not a great relationship between the two fan bases, but I could see Inter, who also could really, really use Barella.
Yeah, and on Cancelo, I mean, right backs, as you said, it's not a strong position right now. It's really hard to find a really, really good right back. Left backs, I think left backs are very strong, but right backs, that would be a shame if Juve had to let go of João Cancelo because of not meshing with Allegri. I would definitely, in this case, favor João Cancelo. All right, next Twitter question. What are the odds Irving Chucky Lozano joins Napoli?
Yeah, so we've talked about him quite a bit last week, but I wanted to answer this question. Look, you know, I know he doesn't play on the same side as Insigne, but I think financially it's kind of hard for me to see Napoli keep Insigne, give him another raise, which I got to be honest, I don't know how much he deserves. But in any event, I just don't know. You look at Napoli, they splurged for their standards on Fabian Ruiz, but that's because they had sold Jorginho. So usually you have to look, one expensive name comes in, one goes out. So let's see. I know Lozano has a big market, Manchester United being one of them. Raiola's his agent. Man United have a good relationship with him. I could see other Premier League teams being in the mix. So let's see. I think at this moment, although Ancelotti did talk about Lozano yesterday, I wouldn't put huge odds on Napoli signing him.
David, next Twitter question. With Caldara rupturing his ACL, can we say Milan have just been unlucky with injuries, or is there more to this in your opinion?
Yeah, so we've had quite a few. We've had Conti, Caldara, both came from Atalanta. We're healthy there, not so much at Milan. I don't know. I think with like the ACL stuff, I see those as more fluky. You know, if you have constant muscular issues, I think that's probably more on the preparation and whatnot. So I am going to chalk it up to bad luck. You also got to wonder, Juve really weren't that concerned with selling Caldara. And I know they could make a pretty good profit on him because of amortization and plusvalenza. But you got to wonder if Juve saw something in him. They were like, okay, we're fine with this guy leaving. I'm not the biggest Rugani fan, but you look at their two seasons, at least Rugani is able to play pretty frequently. I think Caldara is going to be very interesting next season to see how he bounces back. But these injuries have been substantial. You also got to wonder, you know, how much it's impacting his confidence as well. But as far as per se the issues, I'm going to chalk it up to bad luck because I think ACLs aren't like muscular issues. I see them as more fluky.
All right, David, interesting question here. Is there a bigger tragedy in football than Maldini not winning a World Cup?
I think if you're a Milan or an Azzurri fan, it's got to be up there. I mean, he's literally won everything else. He's arguably maybe one of the most legendary defenders alive right now. That's the only thing missing. Came pretty close, was robbed in Korea, came pretty close, obviously, in 94, 98 team lost on penalties to France. Yeah, so it definitely is a travesty. But I think overall, you know, when I think of Maldini, his career at the club level is really beyond reproach. So there might be some bigger tragedies, but definitely that's something that's missing in his trophy case that he deserved.
Okay, next question, David. Considering the enormous cost to sack Spalletti, does it make financial sense for Inter to sack him?
It's a good question. And look, you know, I think a lot of the quotes Spalletti has made this season were really pretty bold. He's not afraid to go at Marotta, throw some players under the bus. I think the fact that he has a long-term contract and he's owed a lot of money made him more bold. But here's the thing, you know, and I know there's some momentum with Spalletti staying because I think it's either him or Conte, and Conte has a developing market. Like, who knows, maybe Manchester United's again in the mix for him. Maybe Bayern, maybe PSG, who knows. But I think, you know, it's either Conte or not. And I think if Inter can bring in Conte, I think they really got to look at that because I think he really is a transformative manager that can take them to the next step. I think you can somewhat make up that money consistently going to the Champions League, which with Spalletti maybe is a little bit more up in the air. And the other thing, too, is, look, you know, if Inter were to sack Spalletti and replace Conte with him, I definitely think he's going to take 1 year off with a sabbatical. He's owed so much money. But after that, he'd probably want to latch on to another club. And once he latches on to another club, Inter then's off the hook. I think they owe him 2 or 3 more seasons. So I think they would definitely pay out one season and then probably some other team would take him. So for Conte, I would make the switch. For any other manager, probably not.
You know how badly I want Conte at Inter. I'm going to start being hashtag Conte in. That's how badly I want it. All right, David, next question. Interesting here. Any chance you start talking about books on the podcast?
So you guys know we cover pop culture. We have gotten into, you know, some culture books. We had Paolo Condo on. We like doing some talk on that. So I'll tell you what, we'll do like a summer reading list for those who want to take a break from transfers that aren't sports related. So we'll start working on that. So our listeners, start sending some in. You need, you know, to take a break from all the transfer window madness. Send us some suggestions on books we should be reading.
All right, David, which movie had a greater impact on its generation between Marvel films and Star Wars?
Great question. So I'm going to say Star Wars. And the reason I say that is because of how much content has changed, how many more options people have
I got to say, the success of the Marvel movies and the Avengers is really remarkable, because it's hard to get people to leave the house, go to a movie theater. They pack people in like crazy. They've made over 20 of these movies. Oh, I think they've made $14 billion worldwide. The rise of the superhero movie, in a way, ended the reign of the big movie stars. Like, now we barely have a leading actor, actress that can open a movie on their own just because their name's on the poster. So they've really changed the game. But to me, you know, and I agree, you know, I was born in the late 70s. I grew up on Star Wars. We had so many few options. Like, my cousin and I, who spent our summers together, we used to watch Star Wars like literally every day. We knew that thing by heart. I really think because there really was so few things. We didn't have YouTube. We didn't have Netflix, all these TV shows, all these niche programming. So I am going to say Star Wars because of that. But that makes the success of Marvel even more remarkable in the era where there are just so many options and so much niche content.
All right, David, next Twitter question. Are you a fan of rap rock bands like Rage Against the Machine?
So I'll say I like Rage. I think their first album, absolutely groundbreaking. I definitely agree with a lot of the things they stand for and they talk on songs. So definitely, yeah, I'd consider myself a fan of them. I think after that, it got pretty bad. Like, I'm not a big Korn guy, Limp Bizkit and things like that. Like, that to me, that's when I kind of lost the plot. Like, what I like about Rage Against the Machine is Tom Morello's a virtuoso guitar player. Some of the things he does with guitars are really remarkable. I feel like a lot of the other rap rock bands that came after that, the musicianship wasn't as important. So I kind of lost a little interest. I will say, anyone that likes those bands, definitely check out Faith No More. I know a band they've talked a lot about. They kind of started that whole rap rock thing with their big crossover hit Epic. So if you like those bands, check them out. But I'm definitely a big fan of Rage, but not so much what came afterwards. Okay, guys, so we're going to close the podcast. They teased it at the front with we're going to talk about the issue of racism in Italian stadiums. I've said it along. This is an issue that's much bigger than calcio. So not surprisingly, we got into history, some politics, social issues, and whatnot. I think you guys kind of know where I stand on a lot of these things. I was really reticent to even talk about it on the podcast altogether. But when I saw Gina De Blasio, who's our next guest, his article on it, I figured we'd have a good conversation. But don't forget that I gave you fair warning. There's no talk on calcio. If some talk on politics offends you, please remember that I gave you fair warning. But thank you, everyone, for listening, and we look forward to chatting with you on Thursday again. Okay, so for the last guest of today's podcast, this is a very interesting subject. So I know a lot of you, our listeners, have been asking me a lot to get into a little bit more the problem with racism in Serie A stadiums. And we've talked about it on the podcast quite a bit. But, you know, this is a subject that really deserves nuance and research and firsthand knowledge, because I really don't want to half-ass something like this. So I was, to be honest, on the fence on even really talking more about the subject until a few days ago. I came across this article that showed up on my Twitter timeline, an article that I asked the simple question, you know, does Italy have a racism problem? And our next guest is the author of this article, Gina De Blasio. Really did an outstanding job covering this topic. So we're going to discuss it now. So I'm going to give you guys another warning. We're not going to talk about calcio. I suspect we are going to get into politics a little bit. We're definitely going to get into history. So if these subjects either bore you or might offend you, I'm giving you fair warning. So Gina, it's a real pleasure to welcome you to Calcioland. Thanks for coming on board.
No, thank you very much for having me. It's an absolute pleasure to be on the podcast.
Awesome. So, Gino, before we get to the subject at hand, your article, which was really outstanding, which we'll discuss in a second, was published on this magazine, 1820 magazine, that really focuses on Italy, food, people, culture. And ever since I read your article, I've delved into the other content available on the magazine, and it's really outstanding. So tell our listeners a little bit about 1820 magazine and maybe how you got involved with it.
Sure. So 1820 magazine was a magazine. It used to be a print magazine. And there's still some issues, one and two, flying around. And we've ended up going into a digital format. And 1820 is after the year of birth of Pellegrino Artusi, a man who wrote the book, The Art of Science in the Kitchen and the Art of Eating Well. And he was a bit like a Bill Bryson character. He went around Italy and he documented Italian food. But at the same time, he also documented Italian culture. He was looking at people. He was understanding how different regions, towns, villages, communities, micro communities, hillside communities were all finding a different way to survive in what were testing times in the 1800s. What he discovered was that Italy is a very, very diverse nation. And this was happening, you know, after the unification of Italy in large part. He wrote the book around 1865. I could be wrong, so that would just need to be fact-checked. But that's where the title 1820 comes from. And where the magazine stands today is really a digital platform where we get to tell the stories of Italy in that three-way manner that you just said, food, people, and culture, because everything in Italy starts at the dinner table.
Yeah.
So you'll have discussions of politics, you'll have discussions of sports, you'll have discussions, you know, of local community initiatives. So everything happens there at the table. And so the editor, Marco Paone, who is the editor, brought me on board really to translate the first two editions. And from there, I've kind of helped him now set it out on this path of being a digital magazine and trying to reach, you know, a bigger audience, because there are magazines out there about Italy, but we feel that they're missing part of, shall we say, the subjectivity that's required. And also to tell a story of Italy that I think people don't really understand, which is why there's like articles on there from, you know, talking about TV entertainment. I mean, there's just only one. It's a fantastic article. And, you know, things like Gomorra and Suburra are really different to how somebody might depict Italy if they've only ever watched Under a Tuscan Sun, for example. So we're just trying to find a bit of a different way of retelling Italian society and culture, and give a visual and audio representation for that.
Very interesting. So the reason I asked you first was to give a little bit of frame of reference on what we're going to discuss next. So I've tweeted the link to this article a few times. I recommend, you know, definitely check it out. Maybe read it before you listen to the rest of the interview if you haven't yet, but definitely read it after, because I'm going to try to pay it justice. But Gino really did a perfect job there. So Gino, so calcio, we cover Serie A here mainly on the podcast. I have to say this season has been rather difficult, especially with the instances, the Moise Kean, the Koulibaly at San Siro earlier in the year, recently Bakayoko, and everything that's happened with Lazio. So I've always said this is a problem that really transcends calcio. It's a much bigger problem in Italy. So I'm going to read a couple of things that stand out to me in the article. I want to kind of take these subjects one by one. So those that follow calcio are familiar that Napoli fans, as example, often are targets of a regional xenophobia, if you will. And there's really a perfect line in the article that says regional xenophobia is Italian to its heart. It's hundreds of years old and seen as a societal issue, but race, it's different. Race is about you being completely different than you can possibly be Italian. And another line
that stands out to me is, put simply, Italians enjoy fighting between themselves, but come together to display a darker heart when it comes to race relations. And I think there you really summed it up perfectly. So let's start with the regional xenophobia. So tell us a little bit, and you know very well the history of Italy, how this started, and if you think this is really very unique to Italy, and how would you describe it to someone who's maybe not that familiar with it?
Sure. I mean, I've used the word regional xenophobia, and I stand by it in a good large part of the whole etymology of xenophobia. Somebody pointed out to me that there's also the thing where it's not so much a xenophobia, but it's a kind of a regional malaise with one another. So you've got two aspects. You've got a playful side of it, where there's, I wouldn't say sarcasm, because Italians don't get sarcasm, but
I would say it's like the sfottò, right? A little bit like you would hear the banter forth with calcio, but more regional. I totally get kind of what you're getting at there.
Yeah. So there is this kind of like this banter that's there. And I think that the more time that passes and the more that people realize, actually, I've got, grandparents from the south and I'm born in the north, for example, not myself, but I'm just saying this is what people are finding out and discovering all the time in Italy. That's getting a little bit more diluted. But the other aspect of it is there is a little bit more needle. There is a little bit more menace. So you've got to think Italy is still a relatively new nation.
Yeah.
It's 160 odd years old, really, as the Republic as it stands today. Within that, the last areas of Italy to be kind of brought into control from Rome were the northeast, so where Veneto is, and that's why you've got like Sud Tirol. So the Sud Tirolese, they will identify as Austrian. They won't always identify as Italian. Then you've got Sicilians, and where they stand very separate to a lot of other Italian ideals, because don't forget that they've had mercantile trade, spice trade that has gone through their nation. They've been influenced by a lot of African culture and Arab culture. So you start to paint this picture that actually what's happened is over the years Italy has become unified. But the things that have unified them is because of battles, because of regional differences that have had to be dealt with, on a battlefield and in the courts. And that can be against the will of, those at the time. And that's still carried through to this day. When you've got to look at where it happens now, I think if you look at post-war, so there's like, it's been known as the diaspora, which has happened in three waves. That's mainly been Italian immigration out of Italy. So you've got the first wave, which was which is 1800, second wave, which was pre-war, and the third wave was post-war. And it's really that third wave the second wave, where you've got to look at this as the 1950s, 1960s, 1970s, where a lot of Southern Italians emigrated to Northern Italy because that's where there was work.
Yeah.
So
that was the boom of the auto industry, right? Around that time.
Precisely. A lot of people went and worked at Fiat. A lot of people were at Alfa Romeo. That's where it was all happening, in Milan and Turin. So you had these Southern families that were emigrating to the North. And therefore, you're going to start getting problems within communities. And also, around that time, TV was the precursor to actually people learning proper Italian. Or should we say, it becoming more commonplace because of an American Italian called Mike Buongiorno.
Yeah, I know. Remember him very well. Yeah.
So he came over from American TV to really kind of be used as somebody who could transmit the Italian language to people, because dialect was still so prevalent and within society. So what you've had is this kind of build up over the years of, if you're from the South, you must be uneducated, you must be somebody that works on the land, and you can't speak proper Italian. And if you're from the North, you're a snob, and you're all affected by smog. And, you know, so it's these kinds of things, and it just becomes greater and greater and greater. So it's the varying levels, and that's where that kind of xenophobia comes into it. I mean, case in point, actually, recently in Milan, this was in the news a few weeks back, or it might have been a few months back, but in Milan, you know, there was a poster that was sent out, and it was a lady who owned an apartment, and it was very clear. It says, I will not rent my apartment to anybody from the South, and she used the word terrone, which is like a land picker, you know, you're somebody, you're you know, and that's all you'll ever be. And I mean, it caused outrage, because it's right, so not only are you calling somebody un terrone, which is, it's not a nice thing to hear or say at all, but it's that discrimination that's gone against somebody just because they're from the South of Italy.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a little bit of the basis. I mean, I could be talking about it for hours, but that's the basis for it.
No, I think you said it perfectly. I mean, I grew up in Padova. I'd say most of my friends identify themselves as Veneti. They don't really identify themselves as Italian. They consider, you mentioned they were towards the last regions of Italy to become part of Italy. And yeah, I completely relate to that. So I think this is a really important background. And I think the fact that you said that Italy really is, relatively speaking, like a modern concept that hasn't been around that long, is really important here. So there's all this division regionally, but your article brilliantly explains how they kind of unite when it comes around race relations and people that don't, that aren't born in Italy. So I have to tell you, what was really interesting to me is I read recently an interview with Thuram, who's to play for Juve and the French national team. And he pointed out that, you know, in France, if your parents are immigrant and you're born in France, you become a French citizen. And that's not true in Italy right now. So it's a very different aspect there. So tell us a little bit. You know, obviously, a lot of our listeners that have seen the things with Keane, with Koulibaly and Bakayoko, tell us a little bit about this phenomenon, because I grew up in Italy. I'm not that surprised. I always tell people, don't think that these are isolated incidents. Unfortunately, this happens in pretty much almost every stadium. So tell us a little bit the factors that contribute to this, in your opinion.
The big thing is Italy, in the last 10 years, has taken in 500,000 migrants from Africa. And with that, what has happened is, well, I mean, there's been two major things that have happened because of that. You've got a political element which has preyed on that whole populist agenda. Effectively saying the streets are no longer safe. These people will commit crimes. They will rape and murder you. They will steal from you. So that's, and that's national politics. And that's a national and these are national politicians who are saying these things. And lo and behold, a majority of them, by the way, are from Northern Italy.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say names, but we can all do a Google search and find out who that is.
Yeah,
you've then got, I mean, John Oliver has been probably one of the best ones to point out who that person is as well. So I would advise anybody going on YouTube and searching for that. The other aspect of it is that element that if you are born in Italy, but to, let's say, migratory parents, you're not instantly classed as Italian. Now, with France, it's a little bit different because they've still had, I mean, there was a lot of colonization in Northern Africa. So if you look at that France 98 football team, they had players that weren't born on mainland Africa, but were considered, mainland France, but were considered French. Whereas with Italy, you've got somebody like Mario Balotelli, who received immense amount of abuse for being a black football player.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was born in Sicily, was it? Am I getting that right? Or is he born in Sicily. But his adoptive parents were in Brescia.
Yeah.
And took him in. And yet he was not ever considered Italian. And it's like that for lots of black Italian football players. I mean, you go through the list. You can go Matteo Ferrari, used to be the Parma defender?
Yes. Yeah.
You've got Angelo Bona.
Mm-hmm. Used to be at Juve, now West Ham, yeah.
Yeah, you've got obviously Moise Kean, Balotelli. I mean, those are four, but all four are Italian. All four are Italian. They just happen to be black. So they are treated as not Italian because of the color of their skin. There's no getting away around it. And the contributory factors, I think there's elements of that. As soon as somebody's born, they're not classed as Italian.
Yeah.
There's recent cases in the news of children of Moroccan immigrants where they've helped out. You know, they were there to help a policeman, and you know they're all of a sudden now like this kind of national target, which is just weird. But the other aspects, it just comes down to what does an Italian see themselves as being? Do they see themselves as anything other than, you know, white? The reality is no. Yeah. In my personal opinion, and from everything that I've seen, I've been to football matches in the north of Italy, I've been to football matches in the south of Italy, I've been to football matches on islands of Italy. It's been at every game.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
You know, and put it this way, Carlo Azeglio Ciampi in 2000
mm-hmm.
brought into schools the fact that school kids had to learn the national anthem, because there was this sense that by learning the national anthem, that makes you more proud of your nation. It takes away that regionalism. If there was a program today that could look at the you know, effectively saying, if you've got a classmate that isn't in the same color of skin as you, but they are born in Italy, their parents have come over, they are Italian, I think you might start to have something in 30 years time where it's not an issue. But right now, I couldn't put my finger on it. One of the things you said was about Koulibaly, the incident in Naples. In Milano. And you know, Koulibaly was absolutely, you know, right with his protests. I mean, I think football started; it had to look at itself then. But then again, you had it with Boateng a few years earlier when he was playing at Milan. Yeah. And you know, the response. There's a pizza chef in Naples called Gino Sorbillo, and he blacked up. He thought that the actual answer was to black up as in a way of solidarity. But you could, in some way, it's a twisted logic that you can say, hey, you know, he's as Italian as I am. This learning process that has happened in other nations where it's like blacking up is racist hasn't passed the minds of Italians.
Yeah.
Because it's not that pop culture thing that it's there. The pop culture thing are national politicians getting on a stage like that very person who wouldn't say his name before, but yesterday he did a political rally on Mussolini's balcony. That says where we're at in terms of where a right-wing doctrine, an extreme right-wing doctrine is happening within Italian society. Last year, there was also a man who went into a town centre and started shooting at black, you know, African migrants in the town centre. So, you know, heed caution, I think, is the big thing here with words from politicians. And I think that that's where we're in the state that we're in right now, where we're not finding solutions. They don't see it as a problem.
Yeah, well said. So, you know, at the start of your article, which, again, I can't recommend enough people read, you know, you talked a lot about what's been happening in the United States. And look, a lot of that populist rhetoric that you described in Italy is what got Trump elected. I'm not surprised that Trump's main consultant has been very involved in Italy recently. So I see a lot of parallels. But there are, you know, some big historical differences between the U.S. and Italy. So I want to ask you, you know, what is the hope? And, you know, what stood out to me, what you were describing, you know, talking about the dialects and bringing up Mike Bongiorno was really, really interesting. It made me think, you know, when I go back to Padova now, you know, what gives me hope is when I see the children of immigrants who are in liceo, like speaking in dialetto Veneto, you know, really being integrated. And my hope is maybe, you know, the more of these generations there are, maybe they won't look at these people the way Italy has historically. So that's kind of my hope. And I want to ask you, as someone who knows way more about the subject than I do, kind of how do you see this changing anytime soon? And what needs to happen for it to change?
I think, a few things need to happen. One is that in America, there was the civil rights movement, which is what the piece talks about. It was this idea that in 1954, the start of the civil rights movement, 54 years later, there is a black president. I think one of the big things that the internet has done has been, it's allowed us to give us, it's allowed everybody to have a voice, whether they truly want it or not, but it's allowed people to have a voice. What that does is, though also there is this kind of malignant misinformation. And we've seen that with politics all over the world recently. You know, the hope for me is that people actually don't stop talking about it. The hope for me is that there are avenues and methods to really kind of to do more and kick it out. Honestly, for football, I say in the article about football and how I don't think you can find the answers there, but I've been thinking about it a little bit more. I think if you really start showing in the national sport that it's just not tolerant to this and games get suspended and the fans that do it effectively get a stadium ban, you close the stadium, you make that team, you punish that team. Like Lazio should be on minus 50 points. It shouldn't be anywhere near the Champions League, because you cannot have a group of Lazio fans going to Milan the day before the 25th of April, which is the whole day of independence, the day of liberty. Obviously, with a banner that's about the man that didn't give them liberty. You know, how is that possible? And people will say that's not the club's fault. No, but the club has allowed it to go on in the stands. The club has turned a blind eye, and Fijic, the FA, are toothless. They investigated two Milan players for carrying a shirt because it incited violence. But they won't do anything about a whole curva for 90 minutes chanting fascist propaganda. That, my hope is that a message is starting to get through. It might be slow, and the current political actors at the top of the chain don't see it as an issue, but it is an issue. You're starting to get a little bit more of a sense of this isn't right. So my hope is that actually people are starting to understand. I mean, Gino Sabila took down the photo because the internet pretty much slapped him down for it.
Yeah.
You know, maybe, just maybe, a bit of soft power to go to these institutions, the Footballer Federation, the Cycling Federation, the, you know, cycling, by the way, Giro d'Italia starts next week.
Mm-hmm.
The Giro d'Italia has had these kinds of episodes on the side, you know, banners of all sorts of nature. You've had it in athletics. You know, it doesn't matter. Like skin, I can't, for me, it's unfathomable because skin color just isn't an issue. Like it's not, it's a nothingness. But I've also been privileged in having lived and worked in different nations. And I think that what started to happen is a lot of Italians who have moved away and then gone back to Italy, they're starting to have the right conversations as well. And that's a secondary part of that hope, that maybe, just maybe, we can start to actually, these conversations turn into actions.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can't thank you enough, Gino, for A, writing that article, which was really brilliant. And again, when I read that article, I was like, I have to get this guy on the podcast. Before I let you go, is there anything you want to add or anything, you know, because this subject's really important and it's not something that I take lightly. Is there anything that you'd like to add to this conversation or that you'd like to clarify?
I mean, for me, one of the big things is there's been a few comments on Twitter where it's like, you know, why are you focusing on Italy? Well, the reality is the magazine's about Italy. So, you know, if anybody's offended that I'm speaking about Italy in these negative terms, it's get over yourselves. This is a reality.
As much as
the great wine and the pizza and everything else, all the stereotypes that you can think of. It's as much a reality of Italy as anything else. So that's one thing for me. I think another thing is, you know, Italy is a beautiful, wonderful nation. Not every Italian is racist.
Mm-hmm.
This article is not saying that every Italian is racist. It's saying that there's a problem with racism and there's a problem with education of racism. But it is not saying that Italians are racist or every Italian is racist. You will have every community in the world where you will have racists and non-racists. You know, if you're going to Italy and if my article in any way has shaped anybody's idea of, I don't want to go to Italy now. I mean, that just, it's just ludicrous. I am not a voice where you say, I'm not going to listen to him. You know, this is just a view. It's a viewpoint. It's an opinion piece. It's based on things that obviously we have seen, we have noticed throughout the year in football, in culture. You know, Italy is a great country. It's a wonderful nation with a rich history. Go and see it. Go and visit it. Get a taste for yourself. It's not, you know, this piece is really addressing an issue that I think a lot of other people have tried to address from a football stand, and I wanted to try and address it from like a more cultural perspective.
Well, I think you did a tremendous job. So I can't thank you enough for writing that and coming on. I know you're a big music fan. So next time I have you on, we're going to talk about something a little bit lighter. But I can't think of a better person to covering this subject. So I really want to thank you for doing this with us today.
Thank you, David. Thank you very much. And thank you for the podcast opportunity.
That's the show for today. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much to everyone who sent in a question. As you guys know, we record a lot of these. So if you have another question on Serie A, transfers, TV, music, film, please send it in using the CalcioLand hashtag. And if you enjoyed the show, this is a free show available to all. Please leave us a review on iTunes. It takes 2 seconds to leave us a 5-star rating. If you leave a comment, Alex and I read them all. And these testimonials are great because they are from our listeners. They help us attract a bigger audience. And if you like all the content on the CalcioLand podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon. We have various tiers for you just to listen to an enhanced version of the podcast. We have a tier where you can read a lot of original blogs from me. We'll have Alex once in a while do a video, and I answer a lot of questions there. I think that'll be a lot of fun year-round, and especially during the transfer window. So thank you very much for the support, and we look forward to chatting with you in the next few days.